I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For several years, there's been rising anxiety in New England about an epidemic of prescription drug and heroin abuse. And now enter a new medicine, a powerful painkiller called Zohydro. New England's governors worry Zohydro could make a bad situation worse, giving addicts yet another substance to abuse. And so earlier this year, Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick tried to ban the drug. But that effort was shut down by a federal judge who said one state couldn't overrule the Federal Food and Drug Administration, which has approved Zohydro. Meanwhile, in Vermont, Governor Peter Shumlin has put new rules in place to make prescribing Zohydro quite difficult. And in New Hampshire, initial conversation on banning the drug has been set aside, but many of the state's hospitals, pharmacies, and doctors have said they won't offer it, at least until Zohydro's manufacturer makes changes so the drug is less easily abused. Today in The Exchange, why the upset over Zohydro and how it fits into this bigger picture of substance abuse in New England. Let's hear from you, your questions about this drug, your experiences with rising abuse rates of other drugs like it. Give us a call, the Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have two guests with us for the hour. With me in studio is Senator Peggy Gilmore. She's a Democrat from Hollis with a background in nursing and hospice care. She also serves on the Health, Education, and Human Services Committee. Senator Gilmore, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good to see you, Laura. Thanks.
Joining us from Hanover, Dr. Gil Franciullo, professor of anesthesiology at the Geisel School of Medicine and director of pain management at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center, which has said its physicians will not prescribe Zohydro, at least for now. Dr. Franciullo, good to have you too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, and before we get into how New England's governors and elected leaders are looking at this and dealing with this, just a couple medical questions for you, Dr. Franciullo. Why was Zohydro invented in the first place? What need was it attempting to fill?
Zohydro is a long-acting version of a drug that's been available in the United States for a very long time. So the drug is hydrocodone, and hydrocodone is the narcotic or opioid that's in Vicodin. And Vicodin is a very commonly prescribed opioid in the United States. The duration of action of Vicodin is only about 3 or 4 hours, and the duration of action of Zohydro is about 12 hours. And so a lot of people, including myself, like long-acting drugs because they're far more convenient for our patients. They don't have to take pills every 4 hours. And also because they sort of decrease the reinforcement that can occur when people take a lot of pain medicines for pain rather than use other ways to try to manage their pain. And so Zohydro is a long-acting version of hydrocodone, just the same way OxyContin was a long-acting version of oxycodone. And we can all remember the problems that we had with OxyContin before it became tamper-resistant. And so I'm worried, and many doctors in the United States are worried, that we're going to have the same issue now with Zohydro.
So who might this drug help, Dr. Franciullo? What kind of patients with what kinds of problems?
Well, there's sort of a first point before I answer that question, and that is, does this drug fill some unmet need? Is there a population of patients out there that are suffering because this drug is not on the market? And in my opinion, there is nobody that's suffering out there because this drug is not on the market. And so this drug will help people who have to take Vicodin for one reason or another for long periods of time, for weeks or months or years. Now, Vicodin or hydrocodone, which is the active narcotic, is not the only active narcotic that's on the market. And there are probably 4 or 5 other drugs that work just as well or even better than hydrocodone.
Really? So you're disputing the whole fact that this was approved by the FDA. You're saying it doesn't fill some unmet need.
That's correct.
Why is there so much fear, Senator Gilmore, about this drug adding to New England's prescription drug and heroin abuse crisis?
Well, I think there are a couple reasons for that. One, as Dr. Franciullo said, this drug itself is not tamper resistant, so it doesn't have an abuse deterrent. So it makes it more likely people are concerned to be abused. And I think that there's such a heightened awareness about the terrible problem of prescription drug abuse and addiction. It's, as you said, you've had several shows on heroin recently because this is public health epidemic in many areas, and this is has a terrible impact on our state, on our families, on our economy in many, many ways. And so when you have a new drug like this that gets some scrutiny and controversy, I think people become kind of hypervigilant around this new change.
And would you say that's a good thing, to be hypervigilant about this?
Well, I think that it's awareness of potential problems is always a good thing. I think then people can kind of knee-jerk react. We see that in humans when there's something new. And I think we have to be careful about how we react to a new potential threat.
Just remind us, Senator Gilmore, and we've had a lot of shows on prescription drug abuse and heroin abuse, but just remind us of where we're at in New Hampshire, in New England with this, because it just keeps getting worse every year, it seems.
Well, I think that there's, as we said, there's a lot of concern. Law enforcement has been very concerned about the impact it has on them, on their jobs, on the court system. People in the substance abuse field, and, you know, we've made significant cuts in terms of mental health funding. One of the things we're looking to is increasing that substance abuse disorder monies through Medicaid. But we have not been stepping up to the plate right along and implementing active treatment in all areas of our society. And I think that's there's a very important lesson in there, that we're talking about things that need education, prevention, and treatment.
Dr. Ventura, I'd like your thoughts, too, on how Zohydro's introduction fits into this bigger crisis that we're facing in New England. A lot of concern from New England governors about this issue.
I think they're correct. I'm very concerned about the introduction of this drug. The difference with this drug is – the difference between this drug and other drugs that are on the market right now in general is the fact that you can take a 50 milligram tablet of Zohydro and put it in your mouth and chew it up, and you will get all 50 milligrams of that drug injected into your bloodstream immediately. Within 5 minutes, you'll have that 50 milligrams, 12 hours worth of drug that is instantly put into your bloodstream. Or you can snort the drug, or you can inject the drug and have the same kind of impact. This was the problem with OxyContin. And so people who are not familiar with this drug may chew up a 50 milligram tablet and you know, wash it down with a gin and tonic and will die. And I think that, you know, in 2011, if I recall correctly, 168 people in the state of New Hampshire died from prescription drug overdoses. And I don't want to see that number increase. I want to see that number decrease. We know that when OxyContin became tamper resistant, that the number of people presenting to emergency rooms with OxyContin, with oxycodone overdoses related to OxyContin, decreased. And I would like to see that trend to continue. I don't think it's appropriate to introduce a new drug onto the market that has the potential to kill people who suffer from addiction or even people who are just abusing the drug, somebody that thinks it's appropriate just to grab one of these pills to get high on the weekend. It's a potentially lethal drug, and I'm worried that people are going to die from the availability of this drug.
So we've heard a lot over the past, you know, 5 years at least, about abuse of prescription drugs like OxyContin and Vicodin. So are you saying now, Dr. Ventura, that those other drugs are all tamper resistant? We don't need to worry about people abusing those anymore?
No, they're not all tamper resistant at this time, but OxyContin is tamper resistant. And OxyContin is a drug that and oxycodone, which is the active drug in OxyContin, is a drug that people who suffer from the disease addiction really like. And so the drug companies, you wonder, how do you do a study about how much do people like drugs? And the way the drug companies will do these studies and investigators do these studies is they will take a group of people who are addicted to opioids and they'll give them different drugs and they'll say, how much do you like this drug compared to the other drugs? And drugs that get a high likability score are drugs that are very likely to be abused. And so the two most abused drugs in the United States over the past decade or longer have been oxycodone and hydrocodone. Hydrocodone, the drug in Vicodin, and the drug that's in Zohydro. So hydrocodone and the drug that's in Zohydro has a very high likability factor. People abuse methadone, but it doesn't have the same likability. Drug addicts don't like it as much as they like Vicodin, as they like hydrocodone. And so this is a drug that's going to be sought after. So no, there are other drugs on the market, long-acting narcotic or opioid pain relievers on the market that are not tamper-resistant, but I don't think that they have the same likability that hydrocodone has.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're talking about Zohydro, why so many New England governors are upset about this new drug, how it fits into the bigger picture of substance abuse in our region. Let's hear from you, your questions about the drug, how it works, how it's been introduced, your experiences with the rising abuse rates of other drugs like it, including the prescription drug and heroin abuse linkage. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. You know, both of you, I think you first, Senator Gilmore, there's been some pushback from patients on this who are saying, you know, why should we pay for the sins of others? This drug could really help us. Why are we being denied the opportunity to ease our terrible pain? So what's the balance there, Senator Gilmore?
Well, I think there's always a, you know, public health, public safety balance in anything like this. And I think that we need to rely on excellent clinicians like Dr. Pacciullo to help patients and other physicians find good and alternative methods of managing pain to keep them in the best quality of life that they can find. And I think that we're very fortunate in New Hampshire that we have a strong, good clinical practice and people come together and people share that knowledge. And that's the key to bringing this forward so that patients get what they need and we are doing what we can to protect the public safety and public health.
Coming up, we'll talk to one doctor who is prescribing Zohydro. We'll also talk about attempts around New England to ban the drug, how those haven't worked, some new restrictions being put on it in Vermont and Massachusetts. We'll also take your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. If you know of a college student, a young entrepreneur, or a local business that's making a difference in the community, why not nominate them for a Rising Stars Award? NHPR and Stay Work Play are accepting nominations for the awards to recognize young people and innovative companies around the state. For more information, visit nhpr.org. More on the concerns and controversy over the new potent painkiller, Zohydro, on the exchange, and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the U.S. Supreme Court upholds a Michigan voter ban on racial preferences at state universities. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, helping generous donors give back to their communities since 1962, online at nhcf.org. And Company C in its spring collection, and a palette of inspired colors bringing colorful living to your home for 20 years with bright creative designs. Retail store in Concord and at CompanyC.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, concerns and controversy over the new powerful painkiller, Zohydro. The FDA has approved this drug, but across New England, there's worry that the drug will only add fuel to the fire of the region's drug addiction problem. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And Dr. Fanciullo, the same question that I asked Senator Gilmore before the break, please. You know, we have heard some patients say, I'm not a drug abuser. I would really like this. There was a blogger for The Washington Post who says, unfortunately, those who are only interested in the high have ruined the system for true chronic pain sufferers. What do you think about that? Should people who are really suffering just terrible pain be denied a possible option just because other people might abuse it?
Well, Laura, when I look at my practice and I look at the practice at Dartmouth, we see almost 10,000 patient visits a year. And when we met, when our four other pain physicians and myself and our nurse practitioners met a couple of weeks ago, we could not think of a single patient in our practice who was being denied treatment because of the unavailability of Zohydro. And so I would have to say that if a patient feels that they are being inadequately treated because of the unavailability of Zohydro, that they should get another opinion from another doctor because there is a way to treat them. Zohydro does not fill an unmet need. There are other options available. But I also agree with what you said, too. I think that our wonderful patients who suffer from chronic pain and who are suffering severely and who benefit from these drugs are being pigeonholed along with criminals, along with people who suffer from the disease addiction, and along with people who abuse and misuse these drugs. And it's really tragic that they're placed in that position.
Joining us now on the phone from the Seacoast is Dr. Joshua Greenspan. He's founder of American Pain Institute in Portsmouth. He's board certified in the specialty of pain management. And Dr. Greenspan, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
What kind of patients might need Zohydro, Dr. Greenspan? Who are you giving it to?
Well, patients who have continuous pain as opposed to intermittent pain. So there are people who have chronic pain that lasts throughout the day and into the evening. So, and those patients who are already benefiting from the short-acting medication, Vicodin. So for those patients who are already on Vicodin, but they're taking Vicodin frequently throughout the day, what they're attempting to do really is trying to take a short-acting pill and make it into a long-acting pill by taking it frequently. So for those patients who are, you know, deriving benefit from Vicodin, I am prescribing Zohydro for those patients.
So it's so the
I have prescribed it a few times, and I found it works very nicely.
Yeah, tell us what kind of results you're seeing from those patients who've switched to Zohydro.
Well, the results so far are very positive. Zohydro, as you know, is a new medication, and like all new medications, only certain insurance companies will authorize it, requires prior authorization. It's not easy to prescribe compared to other medications. Ironically, it's much easier to write a prescription for OxyContin than for Zohydro.
What kind of results have you seen with people? You're seeing people suddenly saying, hey, Dr. Greenspan, I feel better? Or?
Well, yeah, they come back saying that they feel the pain is more under even control throughout the day. And that's the idea of a long-acting medication.
From what I understand also, it's not only longer acting, it also is more powerful, so could hit the pain down more. Is that what you're hearing, Dr. Greenspan?
No, it's hydrocodone. It's nothing really magically powerful. It's actually, as a molecule, hydrocodone is not as powerful as other molecules we have for chronic pain. For example, fentanyl, 180 times more potent than morphine. Oxycodone is twice as potent. Methadone is five times as potent. Dilaudid is 5 to 8 times more potent. So there are other molecules out there in the field of opioid analgesics or narcotics that are far more powerful, potent for pain on a milligram-by-milligram basis compared to a hydrocodone.
I see. So it's more the long-lasting nature of it than the power of it.
Correct.
As you know, Dr. Greenspan, there's been a lot of worry about this drug coming onto the market. Governors, attorneys general here in New England saying it's going to make the region's drug abuse predicament even worse. How do you feel about that?
I disagree with that. Actually, one of the things I treat as well as pain is addiction. And so I am also certified in addiction medicine. And so I see patients who are genuine opioid addicts every week. And, for example, the medication I prescribe for them is Suboxone, which I find to be a real wonder drug as far as quelling physical cravings for addiction. And I think it's kind of inconsistent that we live in a society that wants to legalize marijuana but then wants to make other medications illegal for the treatment of addiction or limit their use. I think with the Zohydro, one of the concerns is that it lacks the tamper ability.
Yes.
Where other medications like OxyContin, years ago, they changed the formulation to become more tamper-proof. Other medications have done the same, like Avenza and Cadian. And so for that reason, I can understand the trepidation. But when it comes down to it, though, the world is a very pragmatic world when it comes to addiction. And people who have opioid addictions usually will choose the medications that are the cheapest. So nowadays, the biggest medication we're seeing people coming in on is heroin, which is an opioid.
Right.
And the reason why they're using heroin and oxycodone is that heroin is much cheaper than oxycodone. So really, you know, as far as worrying about addiction, the price of Zohydro is so sky high, it's so difficult to get a prescription for it because it requires prior authorization and has huge copays attached to it, that it's not going to be a medication, at least right now, that's going to be readily available on the street because the cost is so high. And so to have access to it, it's going to be very limited.
One more question for
you. People would rather choose the easier path.
Yeah, sure. You're saying it's not the cheapest and easiest to get. In fact, it's difficult to get and it's expensive. What would you like to see happen, Dr. Greenspan, in terms of how New Hampshire and your fellow healthcare providers in this state approach Zohydro?
I think every provider has to do as they see fit themselves. I think that if you look for a concession amongst all providers, I think it's unlikely you're ever going to get it. We all have our own beliefs and our own dispositions, and we all have our own history of treating patients ourselves. And so we turn to be, you know, have negative reinforcement from bad outcomes and positive reinforcement from positive outcomes, but oftentimes the negatives outweigh the positive. I remember a similar situation, though, to this, though, and that's when methadone was, it came in 10-milligram tablets and 40-milligram tablets, and there was a young man who overdosed on the 40-milligram tablets, and a senator, it turned out to be the senator's son, passed a law that made the 40-milligram formulation illegal. So what happened? Overnight, if we had a patient on more than, you know, on 40-milligram tablets, instead of writing for a single 40-milligram tablet a couple times a day, we wrote for up to 10-milligram tablets a couple times a day. So patients then were, instead of having to take one wafer, essentially, were forced to take four individual tablets a couple times a day, which meant that went to the pharmacy to get a prescription filled, rather than getting a prescription for, let's say, 90 wafers, they had to all of a sudden get, you know, 500 wafers.
So it got kind of inconvenient.
So what really changed? We didn't change the way we practice as far as the dose of methadone. But what happened is that when they went to the pharmacies themselves were not able to stock enough 10-milligram pills. So the only people who really suffered from that were really the patients. And as far as the abuse potential, whether you're using 40s or 10s, you can still abuse any medication you want. I mean, back in when I was a kid, people were sniffing glue, and that wasn't even prescribed. So, I mean, when it comes down to it, when it comes to people who are a bona fide addiction, you know, there's always a root cause for the addiction, and that's something our society should really be focusing on.
Dr. Greenspan, it's been good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us. Lots to chew on here.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Dr. Joshua Greenspan, founder of American Pain Institute in Portsmouth, again, board certified in the specialty of pain management. And as he told us, he also works in the field of addiction. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Senator Gilmore and Dr. Fanciullo, before we go to our listeners, and I do want to do that soon, two quick follow-up questions to Dr. Greenspan, what he told us. To you, Dr. Fanciullo, he said, look, addicts will always find the cheapest and easiest high out there, and that is not Zohydro. He says it's expensive and it's hard to get. What do you think?
I think that there will be let me step back. I think that addiction crosses all socioeconomic strata. And so there are a lot of people who have a lot of money who are addicted to drugs who will be able to afford Zohydro. And Zohydro is going to be the new expensive designer drug that people who can afford it will want. And as soon as this drug hits the market, the illegal market, there will be people who will be willing to spend high amounts of money to obtain it.
Senator Gilmore, the political reaction he talked about, he used the example of methadone years back. He said, you know, we see a problem, we overreact, and the problem ends up not being solved. What do you think about that?
Well, I do think that legislators have to be very careful that our job is not to be in the world of dictating clinical practice. I believe that very strongly, that we need to set prudent policy that does not cross the line into interfering with the practice of medicine. And I think that we need a lot of checks and balances on ourselves to monitor that. I mean, I think you're seeing right now legislators struggling with how do we address this problem. and some who will say, well, we're just going to ban it legislatively, and others of us who say, now, what is our role in this, and is our role to, in that way, interfere with the clinical practice of medicine? And
well,
to me, it's not.
There were some discussions in the state Senate about whether New Hampshire should consider banning it. From what I understand now, Senator Gilmore, those discussions have stopped, given what happened in Massachusetts.
Well, I think that the court decision in Massachusetts makes a difference. And I also think that when we look at how best to solve a problem, we are seeing the result here that one would hope for. The professionals within the field themselves are saying, whoa, we need to step back. We need to put our own internal moratorium on the prescribing of this drug while we figure it out, while we wait for the abuse deterrent additive to take effect, so that hopefully that you get the policy outcome from within the profession. The medical society has stepped up and said that they would advise not prescribing it. Pharmacies aren't carrying it. Hospitals have put I think Dr. Fasciullo's hospital has said they won't be in the practice of prescribing it. So I think that's how you would like to see these problems solved from a policy perspective rather than a legislative mandate.
Again, our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Silas is waiting in Francistown. Hi, Silas. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. The question I had goes more to the fact that my understanding is the rate as a percentage of the population for prescription painkillers in the United States is significantly higher than it is in Europe or other industrialized countries. And it seems to me the medical community needs to address that disproportionate, that maybe there's just too much of use of these types of painkillers.
Thank you, Silas, for the call. Dr. Fanciullo, I'll turn that to you. He's saying he thinks that there's a higher percentage of people in the United States taking painkillers in the first place, and maybe we should be looking at that.
Yeah, he's absolutely correct. 99.5% of all the hydrocodone sold in the world is sold in the United States. It's just astounding the expectations now in the United States. The expectation in the United States is to basically have a pain-free existence. And anybody that sat with their grandparents knows that there's no such thing as a pain-free existence. It's an unrealistic expectation. I really like, and I have to agree with Senator Gilmore, I really like what's happened in the state of New Hampshire. I love the fact that all of the hospitals and the doctors and the professional societies and the legislators have gotten together and said, well, we just don't think that this is a good idea. Let's just join together and not use these drugs. The only other part of that is that there are going to be outliers, and there is such a thing as a bad doctor. There's such a thing as doctors who will misuse the system, abuse the system, and prescribe these drugs when it's not appropriate to prescribe these drugs. And so I think that one of the things that I want to emphasize is that doctors should be held accountable for prescribing these drugs when perhaps they shouldn't have prescribed these drugs. And so the Board of Medicine has a large role in this whole problem in making sure and ensuring that doctors who shouldn't be practicing and shouldn't be prescribing these drugs are not prescribing these drugs.
Although, sure, you can't expect to live your whole life without the tiniest shred of pain, but what about the idea, Dr. Fanciullo, that it's a worthy goal. Getting people out of pain is a worthy goal.
It's a worthy goal, but realistically, if you look at the research on the long-term use of opioids, so people who have chronic pain, who take narcotic pain medicines or opioid pain medicines, the best you can really expect long-term is overall about a 30% reduction in pain. So there are some people that get more than that, and there are some people that get less than that. But really, all these drugs do, and they really are our strongest pain relievers, is reduce people's pain with chronic pain by 30%. If you suffer from cancer or if you have some other horrible disease, it seems to be a whole different story. We're able to control people's pain much, much better if you have cancer or some other terminal disease. But with chronic pain, people who have back pain or people who have nerve pain that's been going on for years, long term, it seems like the best we can really do is reduce their pain by about 30%, even using opioid pain medicines. So it's unrealistic, really, to expect more.
Silas, thank you for the call. And let's go to Leominster next. Leah is there. Hi, Leah. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi. We clearly have a drug problem here in New Hampshire. And my question is, do normal PCPs provide the steps for the drug addicted, or is it something that they have to actually go to a separate program to get help to get off of these medications that are just flooding into the system on a daily basis, it seems?
So, Lee, are you saying where do drug addicts get help right now?
Right.
Or?
Exactly. Yeah. Where would one go that's addicted to drugs? Because it's an epidemic in New Hampshire right now. And, like, where do these people turn if they wanted help?
Yeah. You know, and this is something you raised earlier, Senator Gilmore. Go ahead. And there's some shifting going on in New Hampshire right now.
Yeah. Shifting in looking at how do we fund substance abuse programs at a higher level, and where are those specialists in addiction medicine or addiction, the practice of addiction as a disease, because we have long recognized within the field that addiction is a disease and it needs to be treated as does any other. And, you know, certainly there are good organizations. New Futures is one that does a lot of, not only helps with policy development, but leads people to good and specialized treatment of addiction. But we are woefully underserved in our state in many areas, and this is one of them.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many calls we've gotten when we've done past shows on this topic. Often mothers will call in and say their sons have substance abuse problems. They couldn't get help somewhere, and they didn't know where to turn, and then the son ended up in a life of crime. Right. We've gotten a lot of these types of calls. So where, to answer Leah's question, where do people go right now?
Well, I think you start with, as Leah said, with your primary care provider, your PCP. Try to get a referral to a good and well-known and reputable place. But, you know, one of the drivers in the recent expansion of Medicaid, the New Hampshire Health Protection Plan, was one of the big incentives for many of us was the added substance abuse disorder coverage that would come with that, because we have not recognized it as a disease that needs good and proper treatment, as we have done in so many other cases. So I think that, again, it's making people aware of where those providers are that treat addiction and understanding that we need more in that field.
All right, Leah, thanks a lot for the call. More of your calls and emails in just a moment. More conversation about Zohydro and its impact on New England. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Supreme Court upholds a Michigan voter ban on racial preferences at state universities. Then, for this month's Reader's Review, a celebration of poetry with three award-winning poets, all coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health. 13 locations statewide. Information at d-hdocs.org. And Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping the community thrive for over 145 years with 7 full-service branches in Boca, Kentucky, Concord, and Nashua. TheMerrimack.com. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, are we seeing a surge for solar power in New England? That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today on The Exchange, controversy and concern about the new painkiller, Zohydro. Join us now with your questions and comments about this drug, how it fits into the broader picture of New England's opiate addiction problem. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Senator Gilmore, Dr. Fanciullo, we have now with us on the phone James Vara from the New Hampshire Attorney General's office, where he's head of the Drug Prosecution Unit. James Vara, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, your office, along with attorneys generals in more than 24 states, have written to the FDA about Zohydro, asking the agency to reconsider its approval of this drug. How come?
The issue, specifically for New Hampshire, is because we already have an opiate problem in New Hampshire. We have a heroin epidemic. We have prescription drugs are highly available on the streets, and the concern certainly for Attorney General Foster was that adding another one to the streets is a concern that we have.
Is this type of request unusual for states to ask the federal government, you know, you made a bad decision here, we want you to reconsider it? I mean, is that something you typically do, or is this unusual?
I would say it's fairly unusual that they do that, but that being said, there are many times in which attorney generals throughout the state ask pharmaceutical companies questions and concerns that they do have regarding them. So it's unusual when it's a banded group of attorneys general that are doing it, but it certainly isn't something that is highly unusual, I would say.
And about 30 of you have gotten together on this, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So, 28 attorneys generals, yes.
What are you hearing from law enforcement in the field about this?
Sure. And as indicated earlier, my main role is the attorney for the Drug Prosecution Unit, as well as New Hampshire Drug Task Force. And what I certainly can say that law enforcement has the same concern that I have, that we're now adding another highly addictive opiate drug to the streets, and that will add to all the other highly addictive opiate drugs, including heroin.
Is Zohydro really any worse in terms of addiction and its resulting problems, James Vara, than any of the other drugs that you see out there? Or is it more that it's not worse, it's just adding into an already bad situation?
I am certainly not qualified as a doctor to say what, and I know that you do have some experts who are on here who could discuss that. But what I would say it is, as you indicated, adding another drug to the streets that is not tamper-proof.
What's the right balance, James Vara, in terms of, you know, allowing patients who might have extreme pain and who think this can help them versus the addicts that you're concerned about? Now, clearly, you're on the law enforcement end, but I wonder if you feel some sympathy for patients in chronic, difficult pain who might think, hey, I'm not going to abuse this and it could really help me. What's the right way for the state to balance those needs?
And I think that's a balancing act, really, in many ways, that with every highly addictive opiate drug, or any drug for that matter, that has to be a concern for the physicians themselves. And first and foremost, it's a physician decision, certainly not a law enforcement decision on what should be prescribed. But again, our concern then becomes what happens after the addicts, which you certainly have sympathy for, who are having pain. It then goes from someone who's having pain to someone becomes an addict, and then we then move to the drugs being on the street.
What do you hope happens next with this, James Vara?
Oh, I would hope that the FDA reconsiders it, but that would be something that would be unlikely from what I'm hearing. What I am hoping, first and foremost, is that physicians will consider other options if that's available. And again, I am not a physician. I certainly wouldn't want to pretend that I was one, or I cannot say for one is a person who's having extreme pain. But we would hope that physicians in many ways would look at other options. If that is not an option and it is going to be prescribed, that it be limited. Because, again, what we have happened is these drugs get prescribed and many a times they end up on the street.
Well, and as we've seen in Vermont, Peter Shumlin has put in some pretty tight controls there in terms of Zohydro. James Vara, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's James Vara, Assistant Attorney General, head of the Drug Prosecution Unit. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Alice in Goshen, which gets to something that I was talking to James Vara about. She says, after being struck by a car, I used painkillers for months prescribed by my doctors. To criticize a new medication because people may misuse it is backwards. Alice says the problem is addiction, not advances in medicine. Dr. Fanciullo, what do you think about Alice's question and this broader question of, you know, who's going to abuse this, and is it fair to deny it to people who could use it for pain?
So I hope I don't start sounding like a broken record at all, but I think that there are other drugs that are less likable, have less potential for addiction, that are already available. And so I don't see that there's a real necessity to add this drug to the market. And I agree with Mr. Vara what he was saying. And I would also say, you know, the New Hampshire Medical Society has come out with a resolution stating that they oppose the introduction of any new long-acting opioid that does not include some type of deterrence protection. And so this is a consequence of the availability of Zohydro. And so at best you can say that Zohydro has sort of snuck in under the wire and is now available, despite the fact that the New Hampshire Medical Society and most of the doctors in our state think that this drug has more risk than any potential benefit.
Well, and Senator Gilmore, as we talk about policy, that's where you come in. So, again, Deval Patrick, Massachusetts, tried to ban it. The court said no. So just this morning, the Globe had a piece on tight restrictions that the Patrick administration is going to put on Zohydro. Peter Shumlin has already made it very difficult to prescribe Zohydro. What might New Hampshire do?
Well, I think one of the things that Massachusetts has done, maybe referenced in your Globe article, is the Board of Medicine is requiring that physicians, as part of their continuing education, have education around this pain management. And, you know, for any physician or any provider, there's always a risk-benefit analysis when they do a prescription of a drug. And as Dr. Fasciullo said, in this drug, one of the risks is a higher risk of addiction. And so that, to again get back to the professional community, so if we had, as Massachusetts has, requiring the education, requiring people to understand the alternatives, excellence in pain management, and looking to do what you can do to avoid the risk of addiction, I think that's a very good regulatory role. You know, again, I think we find that balance of how do you help the professionals police themselves, as it were, and make that possible through our governmental process.
So some strict protocols in terms of how it's prescribed, who prescribes it, and so forth.
Well, from within the profession, I think that's the key to that. That I don't think it's the role of the legislature to say who can, well, we do say who can prescribe, but how things are prescribed or what the dosage is. That's not our purview, but our purview is to help facilitate that so that other professional bodies can do that.
Let's take another call, and this is Richard in Contoocook. Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling The Exchange. You're on the air.
Hello, Laura. Quick question. Hydrocodone acetaminophen compounds, commonly known as Norco or Vicodin, are currently DEA scheduled class 3. Rumor has it that these preparations are going to be elevated and moved to a class schedule 2 status, which will then mean that any prescription written by any physician will not be allowed to be refilled every time a new prescription must be written by the physician. How will this affect, on top of the probability of Zohydro being on the market, the availability to clients that honestly need medication for pain control and the increased inconvenience of having to go to the physician each time the medication is required? I'll take my answer off the air.
Actually, Richard, if you could just stay with us for a second. So just to make sure I'm clear on what you're saying. So there's a certain class of painkillers that you're saying are going to become soon tougher to get from class 3 to class 2. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. Class 2, Schedule 2 prescriptions are basically narcotics or amphetamines. They are not allowed to have refills on the prescriptions. Each prescription must be independent of one another. Currently, these items are Schedule 3, which will allow 5 refills within 6
sure.
months. If it is being moved, that will also affect access to pain medication for those who need it by adding additional inconvenience to obtain a written prescription each time the painkiller is needed. This will also affect pain management therapy. I'd just like to comment on that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Richard, very much. And so what do you think, Dr. Fanciullo? Access to pain medication could already be getting tighter. I think I'm hearing some concerns from Richard about this.
Yeah, Richard is correct. The DEA and the FDA have proposed that hydrocodone become a Schedule II drug. But even with Schedule II drugs, I can write a 3-month supply of the drug for my patient. I have to write 3 separate prescriptions, and I have to write on the prescription, "Do not fill until," and I have to date the prescription with the date I write the prescription. But I can give my patients 3 separate prescriptions for Schedule II drugs right now.
So it's going to get a little tougher, but you're saying it's not unmanageable.
That's correct.
Could you put these changes then in the context of Zohydro coming to the market? It sounds like, again, a little tougher, but nothing terrible.
That's correct. I think most of us have been surprised and really have not been able to understand why hydrocodone was a Schedule III drug at all of these years. And most of us think that it's long overdue that hydrocodone become a Schedule II drug. It's as I said, it's one of the two most highly abused opioid pain medicines in the United States, oxycodone and hydrocodone. And why hydrocodone would be a Schedule III and less abusable drugs would be Schedule II is beyond my comprehension.
You know, Dr. Fanciullo, Senator Gilmore talked about policy just a minute ago and her feelings about how the state should approach this. You're director of pain management at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. What's your organization's policy on Zohydro, and how would you like the state to set policy on this, if at all?
So our policy at Dartmouth-Hitchcock is that the drug is not on our formulary right now. Nobody has proposed, none of the doctors within the Dartmouth-Hitchcock system have proposed adding this drug to our formulary. The doctors and nurse practitioners in the pain center have decided that we are not going to be prescribing Zohydro. And so it's almost a non-issue for us at Dartmouth-Hitchcock. I agree with what Senator Gilmore has said more than once. I think that I would also prefer that the medical profession police itself rather than have the legislature tell us how to practice medicine, because I think potentially we could do a better job practicing medicine. I think that the Board of Medicine is the entity that really needs, as I've mentioned already, really needs to police the physicians in our state who may not be doing a good job prescribing these drugs appropriately. And the Board of Medicine, like so many other boards and observatory groups in our state, are underfunded. And I think that if they had more resources, if they had more investigators, they might be able to do a better job policing the way doctors prescribe within the state and letting the doctors in the state police themselves more effectively.
Senator Gilmore, you look like you wanted to jump in real quick there.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we're talking about Zohydro, but this is not going to be the end of the discussion. I think I heard yesterday on NPR, I believe, that the FDA Advisory Council was reviewing another drug, and maybe Dr. Fanciullo would be more expert to talk about this, but Mox Duo, which is a similar a combination of morphine and OxyContin, I guess. Again, the same property, sustained release, long-acting, but not in its current form, tamper-proof, not abuse deterrent. The advisory council voted unanimously not to suggest that the FDA not approve it. But we also know that the same committee voted with a strong majority not to approve the current drug that we're talking about. So it's not going to stop with this. So we have to have the policy and the education and the providers to grapple with this problem, because you never see one single problem that is the, you know, one single item that is the overwhelming problem.
So you're saying
it's if it's not Zohydro, it's going to be something.
Are you saying that the FDA's own advisory committee said to the FDA,
correct,
look, don't do this.
Don't do this. Don't do this.
And they went ahead and did it.
And they went ahead and did it.
Why do you suppose that's the case?
You know, I can't speak to the FDA. Maybe your other guests can. They have a new drug. I think that had I been in their shoes, I would say, good idea. We need to put the protection in place, the tamper resistance, the abuse deterrent, and then we'll release it. And I would be interested in Dr. Fanciullo's thoughts on that.
Real quick, too, Dr. Fanciullo, and then I'd like to take another call.
Yeah, I have no idea why the FDA approved Zohydro at all. It does not seem like a logical thing for them to do. With regard to the other drug that Senator Gilmore was discussing, it's a drug called Mox Duo, and it's a combination of morphine and oxycodone. And there may actually be an advantage of this drug. It may be that people have fewer side effects when they take this drug than if they take just morphine or just oxycodone. My understanding is that the only form that is up for approval right now is an immediate release form. So it's not the long-acting version like Zohydro, which contains a very high dose of the drug. The company that makes this drug also makes a long-acting version, and I have no doubt that that drug will be presented to the FDA also. But I would hope that they would not approve that drug unless it were in a tamper-resistant form. The immediate release version, which is being proposed right now, I think might actually add something to our armamentarium and doesn't have the same risk that Zohydro does.
So what do you think, Dr. Fanciullo? What do you hope happens next with this issue of Zohydro in New Hampshire and New England?
So if this were a perfect world, what I would like to see happen is I would like to see happen what's actually happening. I would like to see that we have this wonderful dialogue between the physicians and the legislature. I would like to see that the hospitals seem to be coming together and the medical society and the doctors seem to be coming together and deciding that regardless of what the FDA said, we don't really like this idea and we're not going to use this drug. And I would like to be able to police better doctors that probably should not be prescribing this drug and may be prescribing it inappropriately. I think that would be the ideal world.
Okay, and Senator Gilmore, in your purview, the legislature, what do you think your fellow lawmakers should do on this?
Again, I think, as Dr. Fanciullo said, we should be facilitators. The true New Hampshire advantage, to me, is that we have the ability to bring people together, to communicate, to share the best practice and best policy ideas, and then that should be the way we move forward to manage the problems that we face. It's in this case, it's health care, it's law enforcement, it's the AG's office. Together, we are much better to solve this problem than to write a new law. That's not the way.
Senator Gilmore, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Laura, for having this important topic out on the streets.
That's Peggy Gilmore, Democratic Senator from Hollis with a background in nursing and hospice care. And Dr. Fanciullo, thank you also for your time. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Laura.
That's Dr. Gil Fanciullo. Again, he's professor of anesthesiology at the Geisel School of Medicine, director of pain management at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, our earlier conversation on the surge in solar power. This sun-fueled source is one of the fastest-growing types of renewable energy in the country, and although still a tiny piece of the energy portfolio, many are taking note, including traditional utilities. We'll look at these brightening prospects for solar in our region and what might cloud its future growth. Join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where we get support from you, our listeners. And support also comes to us from the New Hampshire Division of Economic Development, helping Granite State businesses grow and prosper online at nheconomy.com. And Upton and Hatfield, serving the legal needs of individuals, municipalities, businesses, and school districts of the Granite State for over a century, online at uptonhatfield.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org. Thank you.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. A decade ago, the Supreme Court ruled that colleges and universities could take race into account as one of several variables in the admissions process. But in 2006, the state of Michigan passed a constitutional amendment banning a